Welcome back to Cargumentative, a show where an erratic and ever-changing lineup of men converse about all things cars and motoring. I'm your host, Thomas Faulkner from the Sunday Times, and as usual, I'm joined by
Mark Paluta,
Mike Salomon,
and today we have a special guest, celebrated voiceover artist and creative director extraordinaire,
Parkview Royalty.
Parkview Royalty, Mr. Matthew Barnes.
Welcome.
Thank you very much. It's a great honor to be here.
It's an honor to have you here.
Is it really?
Thank you. I'm amazed that having turned you down three times that I got a fourth invite.
We couldn't find anyone else.
Yeah.
I'll take that. That's the story of my career.
So guys, touching on some motoring news. Yeah. Nadav bought the wrong car.
Did he?
Why? He did. He got a Porsche 997 GT3.
Yeah.
Which is slower around the Nürburgring than the new Renault Megane RS Trophy R.
Hmm.
Did you know that?
I did not.
Yeah.
Why? What was its time around the Nürburgring?
So, it was...
7
minutes and 40 seconds.
Are we saying that a front-wheel drive, four-cylinder Renault is faster than a proper pucker...
It is.
...sports car?
It's also faster than a Lamborghini Gallardo LP570/4 Superleggera.
Is this a simulated lap time? Because on the basis that it would actually make it around, being a French car.
Well, it'll be interesting to raise that when you relate your story of the rim run later on.
Exactly.
The thing that slows the Gallardo down is the large phallic shape on the front. It's not the most drag sort of friendly.
It's just designed to look cool.
What, the Gallardo?
And pose.
I thought you were going to talk about the phallic thing inside the car.
Let's just break that down. That's a proper bit of news, eh?
It is. It's a prop. So it's an
four-cylinder. What's special about it?
Yeah, power.
So
what's it? A Megane RS Trophy.
Renault Megane RS Trophy R. So it's basically a stripped down, more track focused version of the normal RS Trophy.
Okay. So limited slip diff.
It's got the same same amount of power, but it's 130 kilograms lighter.
How much does it weigh and how much power?
It's around about 222 kilowatts. The press release was quite vague. It didn't actually have a...
And manual.
Manual.
I can't believe that.
It's a good question, actually.
So the GT3 is
non-manual, but
400 horsepower, which in... What's it in
that's
our money?
240, 250 kilowatts,
I would say. Okay. And it's a proper race car. A GT3, and this is a little hatch.
But it just shows in terms of tech. I would imagine that the Renault has probably got a paddle shift gearbox, and I think that that's one of the things that's making the modern cars so fast.
Yeah.
But also, it's got the fancy diffs and all that. I mean, I think the technology advances in the last 10 years are just off the charts.
Yeah, fair enough, but I mean, so does a GT3. It's got all of that. It's got,
I mean, 997's
huge brakes.
It's not that old.
No. 997 is what, 2000? 2008?
12 years. Yeah, 2007, yeah.
10, 12 years old,
But there's an interesting...
So it's come along... Obviously, it's come along a long way.
Yeah.
But there's an interesting observation there in that if the GT3, which is now in, what is it, sixth iteration? RS is also in its fourth or fifth iteration, and that sort of Renault Motorsport tuning that chassis. So, I mean, it's very similar to the GT3 in that probably a couple of things have happened there. One is that chassis is iterative, so each time they've been doing the ring for successively, and it's always been in that sort of last five of Evo's car of the year kind of thing. And the entire technology, which is the thing that's really improved in the last 3-4 years,
more than
good point. Tires, suspension, and you package that on the right day. That's probably why they're a bit vague with the press release, because they maybe don't want to commit to what's been
there. Yeah, you're right. Well, tires is a big one.
And also,
and shortening the Nürburgring, that also helped in the last couple of years.
Well, I think if you compare it, you'd probably do the GT3 of the day against the Megane of the day, and then you take the GT3 of today versus that. I think the GT3 of today is going under 7 minutes.
Yeah. So yeah, I know.
4 liters, 9,000 revs, rear-wheel steering. Whereas that, I don't know about the Megane, but... that chassis has always been something very special.
Didn't you go around the Nürburgring in a what? Tell us.
I did. I went around the Nürburgring in a GT3 RS, was a 991 Mark 1.
First time out?
That's what time out. So I did one lap. I said I wasn't going to bug around in a silly car and risk smashing someone, because that's probably what would have happened. So I found a guy called Elliot who, when we were just starting out on the lap in the car, I said to him, "What do you do for a living?" And he looked at me very seriously and said, "Zis." So he'd done 20,000 laps. That's what he does for a day job. And yeah, he took me around in, I think, just over 8 minutes, because there was a couple of bike crashes. So
yeah. Oh, so you did it as a passenger, ring taxi?
Yeah, ring
taxi. That's quick.
I was gonna say, like, that place, having driven it, there's no place for a novice to be taking a car like that around.
Yeah, absolutely.
I am a professional. Of course I am.
I can't believe it. So we've got two in the room now.
We do. Two professionals. And Mark Pluter, because Mark said that he would like to go out around the Nürburgring.
I said I'd go in my GT3. My GT3. The 996. Go rewind the tapes, Tom. Mm. That's what I said.
So there we go. Okay, we've gone RS Trophy up.
What else is
now the fastest production front wheel drive car around the ring? Mm.
Have you driven one?
I have. What, the Megane or the Nürburgring?
Well, one of the iterations of the.
I have.
And
I mean, it's a really good car. I kind of always preferred the Clio though. I just prefer the size of the Clio. It's a little bit smaller, a little bit more nimble. I love the naturally aspirated one as well. I thought that was one of the best cars ever.
Okay. I've never driven any Megane.
You're missing out.
I want to try. Listen, I've never driven a Ford Focus.
I haven't driven
a Toyota Corolla.
I have driven a Toyota Corolla.
Okay.
That's a point for him.
It was deeply
And we've all been in the back of one, because they're all Uber cars, aren't they?
Yeah.
Anyway, moving on.
More news.
The F-Type is getting a big overhaul in 2020. As we know, it's been around for a while. The Jaguar. Jaguar F-Type. So it's getting new engines and better cabin.
It had a four-cylinder enhanced recently.
Yeah, the 2-liter was really good.
Okay.
I drove that last year. Didn't I come in?
Yeah, you did tell us about that.
Yeah. Didn't you drive it?
Is that not the new engine? There more now? It's a facelift.
It's going to be a new. So it's new cabin technology, new cabin styling, exterior styling, new engines. It's a revamp to keep it fresh relevant. You know.
The biggest problem there, I think, it might be a facelift, but the problem with that car, in my opinion, is that it needs an lift, because it's like they give them to two different departments. Even the first iteration, the front was done by these oaks, and the was done by those owners.
Yeah.
And then they put them two together, and then they're like, "Oh, okay, well, let's make it a convertible, because then maybe people won't notice. Like, we'll put a soft roof on it, so we just join them together."
I thought it was a good-looking car. Didn't you like it?
No.
It was supposed to be their, like, new E-Type.
I've actually just worked out what you people are talking about. I thought you were talking about the sedan.
I've driven the V8 and the V6.
What's that thing called again?
No one knows.
The XE. And the XF.
Exactly, no one knows.
That's what I thought you were talking about.
But there's a good cars. To the point, if you look at that concept that they revealed, Falconer will know, long time ago, like 15 years ago, when they started relooking Jag, and they're obviously taking a long time, they unveiled a show car that was, it was like a D-type, and then they weren't allowed, then they brought it into production. That became, I think, the F-type eventually.
No, but they did a version of that. There are a couple in the country. It's got the hoops behind the seat.
Oh, that's the F-type
project something.
Project 8.
But it was ruined, the concept car was this magnificent kind of, but anyway.
Harry Metcalf's got one of those.
Yeah.
Oh, very cool.
But I think
he's got good taste, I think.
So I think from a news perspective, we need to actually talk about the passing of an absolute legend. Being a very important motorsport week, it's Monaco and the Indy 500 on Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
Two of the most diverse tracks that you could possibly get. Niki Lauda, absolute legend.
Yeah. Passed away Tuesday.
Yeah. I mean, it's just, you know, if you think about that he probably lived, 76 to now, he lived on 40-odd years more than he should have, nearly 50 years more than he should have.
Borrowed time, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it's quite staggering that he died after having had a lung transplant.
Yeah.
The fact that he actually didn't have a lung transplant originally, he survived with his...
Original lungs.
It's pretty extraordinary.
Yeah.
But those kind of guys, I mean, that idea of... You know, you're not here for a long time. You're here for a good time.
Absolutely, but I think I just posted to the group earlier, and Paige will put it up on the Instagram page. But the picture of Niki taking Bernie Eccleston around the Nürburgring, actually into the carousel, in a Maybach Tesco. I mean, you don't get cooler than that.
Oh, is that what that was? Okay, that's interesting. That's cool.
Listen, it's from an era I don't think that'll ever be repeated in world sport. Definitely the greatest comeback of all time. And yeah, will be missed.
But that's an interesting point. I mean, you know, we because it's a generation, it'd be fascinating to ask like a 12-year-old now who's mad about motorsport. So the Lewis Hamilton kind of Leclerc generation, who also will see full-on electric racing, who will also see Formula One-style scale drone racing.
Yeah.
Whether in their, when they look back in 50 years' time, where they'll go, geez, that guy was amazing, what, whoever it is from their generation. Mm. It's maybe the technology will change, but each kind of generation has the same kind of nutters.
Sure.
I think that the problem with that, that was back then and what gave it this mystique is that it was genuinely dangerous.
It was dangerous. I mean, you could die.
I mean, you look at the footage from Lauda's crash at the Nürburgring. That car just bursts into flames. Mm. I was just thinking to myself, you haven't seen a Formula One car burst into flames for a long time.
For decades.
I mean, obviously, it's the fuel cells that basically like keep this thing from going up in flames. But those things, they were like driving grenades.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, you know,
they were proper pilots.
Yeah, exciting times.
What else is in the news?
Motorsport as well. Alonso didn't qualify for the Indy 500.
Yeah, it's because he pranged his car and he had to take a spare car.
Yeah.
That wasn't
fast enough.
Yeah.
When you say Alonso?
Fernando Alonso.
The reason that he wants to do that is he wants to win the Triple Crown. So there are only a handful of people who've won the Indy 500.
Le Mans and Monaco.
No, it's Monaco.
So has he won Le Mans?
He won last year.
Oh.
That's why he entered, and now he was trying to qualify for Indy. He did race at Indy last year, and he crashed out during the race.
I recommend Renault or McLaren.
Yeah, it was a McLaren coloured car this year as well. But I do recommend watching the start, the hour build up to the Indy 500. It is absolutely hilarious. If you've watched Talladega Nights, you will love it.
They sing these songs.
And it's they have a priest who blesses the drivers, and then the F-16s fly over and they shoot guns. It's unbelievable.
Shake and bake, baby.
I hugely recommend watching that hour build up.
Okay,
it's like 650,000 people over the week or something.
No, I think live it's like 500,000 people at the stadium. You must remember that those straights are a mile long each. So they're averaging 240-odd miles an hour on a lap.
It's huge, eh?
Averaging.
It's kind of interesting. You know, they almost took F1 as a brief to say, okay, cool. So F1 puts you to sleep. It's the perfect thing to have on a Sunday. Mm. Okay, it puts you to sleep. You have a nice little sleep, and you wake up when it's all over. And the Americans took the brief to say, how do we make this more boring?
I'll tell you. And it's. I'm not just saying
that to wind you up.
No, I mean, I love Formula 1, and especially Monaco weekend. But the funniest thing with the American oval track racing is that they only race in the dry. So if it gets even remotely wet, they stop the race. But you can race.
It's dangerous.
You can race for like all but one of the laps. And then what happens is, if someone crashes, they have a safety car. And like it has to, even if it's something small, it's yellow, they put the safety car out and the field bunches up, and basically it's the free-for-all and you basically start again. So I mean, in a sense, the racing, you've got to be there and you've got to be like on it the whole time. But it's just, I mean, I don't get the American race.
It's a bit of a joke. So you say watch the before show.
Watch the before show. You will absolutely love it.
So I just checked because Google doesn't lie, apparently. And Triple Crown is Indy 500, Le Mans 24 Hours, and... Monaco Grand Prix.
Why do you doubt me? This is your guest on this show. That's rude.
This is true.
Hoping
I'm hoping not to be invited back. So don't do it properly the first time.
Any more news?
I apologize. That's Monaco, Le Mans,
and the Indy 500.
Indy 500. That's interesting. Eh? Yeah. That's an interesting combination. You should research why that combination. Because I would have said at that era, Monaco was early, so it would have been Monaco. Le Mans and Daytona, or Monaco Le Mans and one of the other.
I think it's a glamour thing. I think it's the most glamorous, you know, or
the money is.
Or people perceive it to be at that time to be the most glamorous.
It could be about the money. Okay, what else in the news? Quick.
Here's a car that Mike will like.
He likes all cars.
Ford Ranger Raptors, an essay.
The Ranger Raptor.
So that's like the bigger, more badass off-road.
So the guys that buy the Rangers and add wheel spaces.
Yeah.
Now don't have to do that anymore.
No, you don't.
It's all done for you.
It's got like
special driving modes. It's got Baja mode, inspired by the Baja cross-country motorsport event.
Okay.
So
same engines.
At the moment, it's got the 2-liter turbo diesel with 157 kilowatts and 500 newton meters.
Probably only with an automatic. Huh?
Is that the same thing that they talk about in East Rand called the Badger?
I don't know, Mike. Depends where you go in East Rand.
Yeah.
I blame CrossFit for that car.
Yeah. Exactly.
It's CrossFit.
CrossFit and
it's the poster
and
boy. It's the poster
CrossFit
boy.
And vaping.
Yeah. It's the triple crown. It's the triple crown of manhood.
No.
On the East Rand.
But then it would be
Arrestor, CrossFit. No. Vaping. And CrossFit.
What about tattoos? No, no, they have to be tattoos.
No, that's
tattoos are table stakes.
Yeah.
That's just like.
I think, yeah, that just gets you in the game.
The triple crown of the East Rand. Brought to you by the Ford Ranger Raptor.
Have you ever thought about a career in marketing, Thomas?
I did once, but I was no good at it. Huh?
Yeah.
Just gobbled me up. Yeah. All right, guys, we're going to have a quick break because that's all we have time for in terms of news. And when we get back, we're going to be talking to the Magnus Walker of Parkview.
Man, this aircon is racist.
For the latest political news
and in-depth discussion and analysis
on events making headlines in South Africa's socio-political space,
join myself, Amil Amrao, and my comrades from the Sunday Times Politics Desk for our Sunday Times Politics Weekly podcast. You can find new weekly episodes on the Times Live website every Wednesday.
This is not a shit.
Can you please come in?
Welcome back to Cargumentative. Guys, in this segment, we're going to talk to our friend Matthew Barnes about his project, which he's had on the boil now for how long?
10 years.
No, it hasn't been as long as that.
It's not that long. It's in July. It'll be 6 years.
6 years.
Yeah.
Now, I can remember when you bought this car.
It was a long time ago.
It was a long time ago, yeah.
I mean, before we get into do you want to give us like a little like introduction as to what you were thinking at the time and...
Well, context like is always
really
a good thing.
Context. Yeah. Give us some context. Like, I mean, 6 years is a long time and it doesn't seem to be done. But what were you originally planning?
Well, the plan has not changed. It's just, to do a good job takes time. And that's just the reality of it. And also...
No, what are you trying to build? Just for the listeners so that they understand...
So, the lawn ornament. 6 years ago, the reason it's called lawn ornament. So what I was thinking was that I have another car which was in an accident. So I was looking for spare parts. So while looking for spare parts, I came across a stash of cars in Vereeniging. So one thing led to another, and the next thing I had a 1967 912 parked on my front lawn.
1967. So short wheelbase.
Short wheelbase. 912. One of the flares had been cut off and the engine was gone.
Which,
and it was
there aren't many flares on a 67. In fact, it's very narrow body.
It's kind of the Kate Moss flare.
Yeah.
Kate Moss flare. For those of you who aren't educated on, it's a Porsche. We are talking about a Porsche.
Talking Porsches because also more context. Matthew and my dad started the PPAS, which was the Parkview Porsche Appreciation Society.
That's right.
And it's basically for, a group of guys who own Porsches, enjoy Porsches, and we would get together from time to time to go out on breakfast runs. That's how I met Matthew again.
Yeah.
Because we met in advertising years before that.
Before you got out and got a real job.
Well,
left me behind.
Yeah.
So you're also Parkview royalty. Do you guys have titles?
No.
Yeah, but we're not allowed to share them with people who are not titled.
What was your title at Goodwood? Remind me.
My title at Goodwood was Lord Sir Matthew Alexander von Barnes III.
That was his actual name on his ticket at Goodwood.
Really?
But the problem was that when we all went to collect our tickets... I hadn't anticipated that bit. So they all walked up and said, "Hi, I'm Mark Polito or Nadav Ravid," and they got their tickets, and the lady then said to me, "Oh, hello, sir, so what's your name?" So I said,
with a lot of people like hanging around.
It's Matthew Barnes. Matthew Barnes. Just look for that, Matthew Barnes. So I said, "Oh, okay, sir, that's right," and she disappeared. And then there was some talking in the back between the ladies and sort of a little bit of mumbling. And then she came back. She said, "Is that very serious? Is that Lord Sir Matthew?" I said, "Yes, yes, yes." And she said, "Von Barnes." I said, "Yeah, but I would just like to shorten it. It's informal." And she said, "Oh, there you go, sir. There are your tickets. I hope you have a lovely time."
So did she use the word sir?
She did. She
Lord,
did. No,
Lord sir.
Lord sir. But look, when you work at Goodwood, you know, there are a whole bunch of people who come with titles who dress like bachis. That's pretty much English.
That's how it works, yeah.
Yeah, how we first met with a car was that your dad bought my car. My
That's
first
right.
car from John Abbott Porsche.
Yeah.
Your old man almost didn't get a car and I almost didn't get my money. They put locks around the doors 2 weeks later.
I nearly bought that car.
Sorry?
Also,
yeah.
The SE.
The SE.
Still the SE. Yeah. Beautiful car. Black interior.
I remember seeing you there and I was like, but why are you here? This was my car.
Is that the one with the hydraulic, the chain tensioner problem?
No, it's never had a chain.
But it does. Tensioner. They're not hydraulic.
Yeah, and different colour panels.
That in itself is a problem.
Well, but a really good fuel pump.
It's like a ticking time bomb. Anyway,
yeah, tell us about the lawn. You said the other people here were educated.
I know. Well, that's a stretch, you know.
Okay. That was then that car, and then the car that I bought immediately to replace that one, because the moment I sold it, I realized I need another one. That was in an accident. I was looking for parts, and then came across a stash of cars. So out of that stash came the lawn ornament, as it was then dubbed, because it sat on the front lawn. On bricks for a couple of months, and so since then, stripping, decided to do all the work myself, so it hasn't really left the garage in 6 years, so that's where we are now.
But it's incredible though, because I mean, you know, I would sometimes go past Matthew's house and sometimes I would see him and I would come in, and it's just amazing to see what he's done all on his own.
That's why he's not like achieving a lot in a very long time, because you're always popping in for a cup of tea.
Well, speak for yourself. I mean, I've seen your car lurking outside, you know, so on numerous occasions.
But now, so there's been a lot of progress in the last couple of weeks. Where are we now?
Jeez, well, that's very kind of you. So where we are now is that the body is ready for final paint. So all finished and flat.
What color will she be?
I can't tell you. That's a secret. Oh. You'll have to wait and see.
But you're going for an outlaw type of build?
Well,
you started building this thing before outlaws were fashionable. Now they've become fashionable. So have you, like, I don't know, have you moved on to maybe even like something a little more different, like maybe in a 959 body kit?
I'm considering it, but actually, you know, I've actually been looking to Gavin Rook and Dutchman for inspiration. But since he banned me from his Instagram profile, it's difficult for me to connect with him. So if Gavin, if you're out there, please, man. I need help with panel gaps.
I can only
get mine to an inch wide, and I need to know how you consistently have like 2 inch wide panel gaps on some of your cars. So please reach out to me.
I've got a picture of one of his car's pedal boxes, which was quite cool. It had like nails and screws and stuff to extend the.
I remember that incident. Yes,
you remember that.
And that was he cut that conversation short.
Yeah.
Which was a pity, because I felt that we were getting somewhere in terms of understanding the real essence of...
Because he's quite professional, just the way he, you know...
Well, and also, you know, because I thought I knew quite a bit about Porsche, because I'm a bit of a nerd, so hence the PPAS thing, which I apologize for. It was always supposed to be a joke. but the thing is, you know, is like, I always thought I knew quite a bit about Porsche, and I'm a bit of an anorak and a weirdo. But then, you know, I had found out just before the Nine Hill Climb that there was actually a 1978 RS made by Porsche.
It's a one of one.
And look, when you look at the front bumper, which looks to be 934 but isn't really, but it's narrow body, then you kind of realize why it was one of one, because it was so ugly.
Yeah.
That Porsche actually just, you know. I think that's obviously how they got hold of it.
Okay, back to the lawn ornament. Where are we? You were telling us.
I've been watching for a while, though. You've done some pretty amazing metal work. You've been cutting stuff and shaping it and all kinds of things.
I think we have to go into that a bit more detail. I mean, you've done a fair share of metal work on that car. I think you've learned to trade.
And was this the first time you'd ever sort of gone into a project and done metal work? Because it's not something, you know, that...
Well, you see, I'm blessed with ambition that far exceeds my ability. So that kind of pushes you down the hole. But then once you realize you're in the hole, you're like, shit, well, the only way I can get out of this hole, because I'm also stubborn, is to fix it. So I've done quite a bit of woodwork. And so I've always grown up doing stuff and lopping off fingers and bits and pieces, but mostly with wood and other stuff. So, yes, metalwork. To be honest with you, I spent a lot of time on the internet, which sounds weird to say.
YouTube videos.
I better just qualify that. I spent a lot of time on the internet, and it's amazing. Seriously, I mean, it's quite extraordinary. In this case, I appreciate on the forums as well. Some amazing forums out there. What you can learn from video and pictures in terms of a shot-by-shot guide, not generally how to do it, but like this is how you repair a sill.
Yeah.
And because a lot of the parts you can buy, you know, sort of fit on a Porsche, has always been an amazingly engineered product. The other bits and pieces, yeah, steelwork, it's cool. It takes a lot of patience, but it's not difficult to learn. You just literally, you've got to go, okay, cool, this is how it works. You've got to figure out how it works. It either stretches, shrinks, bends, or cuts. That's it. And once you've kind of figured out how it moves, then, I mean, it's not like I'm using an English wheel. It's like some of the proper pros. For me, it's like,
which it's made it even more difficult, though.
Yeah.
Because you have to beat the thing into submission.
Sure.
What percentage of the panels did you actually end up having to at least put new metal onto? Because I think, I mean, look,
Almost the whole car, really?
Because the 67 had no galvanizing at all. I mean, those things. Was it even a portion of it galvanized?
No, 73. They started doing the floor pans.
Yeah, the floor pans, and then basically with the SC, then it was properly galvanized. So
everything but the roof. So the roof was solid. The most solid part of the car was the wooden floorboard behind the accelerators.
Really?
Yeah, which is in beautiful condition. But the rest of it, I think it's one of those, you know, Porsches. The rubbers go, the channels block, and then so it just rots in all the same places. So I think in most cases with Porsches, most of them, sort of the water-cooled cars even, it's not a case of if there's rust, it's where it is.
Yeah, and I think that, I mean, look, this thing used to be a 912, so for the listeners, it's a 911 shape, but it had a 1.6-litre four-cylinder engine in it that was carried over from the earlier 356.
Yeah.
Now, you're obviously replacing that 2-litre 911 engine?
Yeah, so...
And what other special bits are you putting on that are going to be quite trick?
So we'll come back to the Outlaw thing, is that, this thing's been around for a long time. Which is not necessarily a good thing, but the car was never original. I personally have never been a big fan of cars that are this idea of restoring a car back to fully original. It's just not my thing. And while I appreciate the people who do it and some extraordinary work, I like scars. I'm not scared of stretch marks.
Have I got a Diablo for you?
maybe. But you know, it's like a beautiful woman with a scar. It's I think there's a story there, and it's quite sexy. So the idea behind the car is not getting too philosophical. I absolutely love the shape of the Porsche. I think it's for me sculpture. Form follows function. And in stripping the car down, I've come to terms with the pressings on that car, and I think they're beautiful. So I'm kind of, number one is I'm not trying to hide the fact that I'm a pretty shitty welder. Number two is the car's got history, and number three is that I think it's quite beautiful. So very stripped out, very functional. In most cases, it's because bits I've traded and bartered. So I've done a lot of trading for parts. So some really special Porsche parts which are from period. So aluminium front calipers, aluminium boot lid, which I traded. Some really nice RSR style, the plastic door handles from sort of 71, 72, 73. And some other bits and pieces I've got. Yeah, I think it's all Porsche, but it's kind of a combination of bits and pieces that are all from sort of 66, 67 to like 71, 72. 2.2 litre in the back, hopefully.
What kind of spec? S, E?
So it's an E spec, so that's mechanical fuel injection. I think it still works. I don't know. I've got it with the car, but who knows if it runs or not. It all turns. That's about 155 horsepower stock. So I've got a lightweight flywheel on it. Ceramic race headers. So I reckon it's going to be about 850.
Nice.
Very, very light. I got some beautiful old original John Cooper aftermarket rally seats from about 1967, 1968 from Graham Foss. So those are in there. So it's very, very light. Fiberglass bonnet, fiberglass bumpers, stripped out doors with custom door panels out of aluminium. Aluminium bootlet, as I say, and then fiberglass bumpers. So, yeah, about 850 with about 155 in the back, and then straight pipes.
Steel wheels.
Steel wheels.
I like those. I saw those on your Instagram post.
Yeah, they're cool.
And you've got titanium.
Titanium wheel nuts.
Yeah.
So one of the cool things is that obviously with, I have a bit of a love affair with California, and obviously California is kind of outlaw Porsche original territory. Roddy Emery and those guys, our grouper. So yeah, there's some amazing little companies there. I mean, California in terms of craftsmanship. Machinery, you know, machine work and so on, artisans. It's extraordinary from the aircraft industry and all that. And that's where Singer comes from, you know, all of that skills. So there are guys there who will sell you these beautiful titanium wheel nuts. So I've collected bits and pieces like that. Some amazing stuff from Stomsky Racing, which is sort of aftermarket mounts. But everything, nothing's fancy. Everything's been replated. Everything's Porsche spec. So part of it is it's not trying to be fancy at all. It's very utilitarian. And the shakedown drive I actually want to do is on dirt. I want to go and do some of the dirt roads.
It's going to be fast.
It's going to be brilliant. Can I make a recommendation?
Of course.
So the bus is thankfully back on its wheels again. The engine is in and all kinds of things. And we managed to get a nice little piece. So I assume you haven't bought a Hooter yet.
No.
But can I recommend
maybe... But I believe you're a bit of an aficionado.
Yes. So I just want to just play a quick clip of what the bus is actually sounding like.
It has to go on the lawn.
I'll shake on it. Okay. And we'll have a ceremony. I promise you I'll put that in.
Okay.
Awesome.
Okay. I rebuilt the Hooter the other day, actually, so... I'll have to put that on the shelf and then.
Yeah, absolutely. Just it's a little bit of extra weight, so it's worth it's worth the extra.
Won't slow me down.
So 912 Outlaw. Mm. When do you think it's going to be ready for its first shakedown?
Well, the answer has always been Christmas.
Okay.
But I've never specified which Christmas.
Yeah.
No shakedown. So the plan was for Angela's picnic. So that but a whole bunch of work got in the way and travel and so on. So I want to do it by spring.
Okay.
Paint electrics, engine, suspensions on, all of that kind of stuff. So hopefully spring, yeah.
And is it going to be, I mean...
I think it's close. I mean, I think, you know, the bodywork was definitely the longest, most tedious, brain-numbing part of it. But now you're assembling. And, well, you got to paint it.
That'll I also got to remember how to put it back together.
Oh, you're painting it yourself as well?
Yeah.
In the garage?
Yeah.
So I've done all the painting in the garage. Yeah. And
you spray-painted the thing yourself?
Yeah.
Really, huh? Yeah.
It's incredible, actually. That is unbelievable. It makes me feel like a total non-car guy, because, you know, when I have a problem or...
Barnes will do that to you.
Or something has to be done, I pay somebody money and they sort it out.
Yeah.
But Barnes can just do everything in his garage, including a full-on, like...
Because he tries.
Respray.
He tries everything.
Yeah, but the difference is that if I was doing the respray on your car and it was my car, it would still be sitting there ready to be done.
Mm.
As opposed to, cool, so I paid money, which you forget about how much you paid, and you're driving your car. So that's the trade-off.
And I assume you look like the kind of person who will celebrate each job with a beer. So what's your beer tally on this build?
I don't drink. It's actually, you know what's interesting?
You don't drink at all?
No, not at all.
How do you have fun?
Life.
I meditate.
And eat lentils and all that kind of...
I give myself lentil enemas.
Mental enemas.
Oh my God. That's what you can do. You actually choose these days. There's a whole movement in California. Half your body is vegan and the other half is carnivorous. That's how you balance the system.
Yin and yang.
So what Hollywood, that's like the prize. You know, if you want to have real cars in Hollywood, like a rock star, you have to have a prize to counteract the real cars.
Oh.
Same way, if you really want to enjoy the fruits of wealth in California and all of that, which is... You know, drugs and booze and meat and fish and things. Then you have to have a lentil enema.
Fair enough.
It's actually look. I might be breaking non-disclosure here, but it's Gwyneth Paltrow's next big health craze.
Oh, sorry.
I've worked with her on the branding of it.
Lentil enema. Oh my.
Lenema, it's called. It's got that perfect catchy like app title.
Hashtag Lenema.
Yeah, an ass tag. Lenema.
Oh, jeez. Got to stop now.
Wow, okay.
Sorry.
And 912, you've got papers for that car, huh?
No.
No. Okay.
No, so I don't have papers for the car, yeah. I've got papers. Well, there's a funny story. I've got papers for the engine. So it turns out that the engine, which I checked to make sure that it wasn't stolen, because Porsche people are generally pretty dodgy.
Mm.
I checked that the car, the engine's actually still registered to a car that's still registered, which is a 2.2e Targa, which is on the books and in an area of South Africa, which I won't divulge right now.
Oh, really?
Yes. I know where that lives.
Oh, wow.
So that's, but I legally own the motor. And then the body, which has a 6-digit VIN code, those, because of Botswana and Transcar and that, who had their own essentially Inata system, although back then I didn't think it actually worked, they assigned those numbers to trailers and tractors and so on. So this has actually got this number is relevant for a tractor in Lichtenberg or somewhere. So
oh, really,
I'll have to go and get it police cleared and do all of that.
Yeah.
But you obviously don't want to remove that number. It's quite it's important.
Absolutely.
I mean, those are early cars. 67 is very early.
So I want to leave that intact, yeah.
Cool.
Well, it's very cool. I mean, I've seen it a couple of times in various states of build, and it's going to be an exciting day to actually see it, you know, rolling down the road.
Alive.
Alive, making a noise.
Well, just give us a target date. Come on.
Yeah. Yeah, September the 1st.
September the 1st?
Yeah.
I'll be that close.
Spring day. There we go.
20. He didn't say which year.
It's a trick, Mark.
It's a Barnes trick.
And just like that. I'm honestly aiming for September the 1st this year.
Okay, fantastic.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
We'll come help put the motor in.
There we go. You'll come help drink beer, because I don't drink.
We're gonna drink beer and take photographs and stick them up on Instagram and feel guilty because we don't know how to work on our cars.
Speak for yourself, Paleface.
As well as Matthew Barnes does.
Yeah.
We're going to take another break, and when we get back, we're going to be talking about media.
Join me, Paul Ash, in a beautiful soundscape as we explore the world in the Sunday Times Travel Podcast. Find it at sundaytimes.co.za.
Welcome back to Cargumentative. Guys, some of us in this room are professionals, and you know, we do motoring journalism as a full-time sort of thing.
Who are those people?
I don't know. Matthew Barnes, you, Mike.
We are actually fully fledged journalists after Monster Jam.
Correct. You guys spoke.
We interviewed people.
You were hosting interviews.
That were doing motorsport.
Witty remarks.
Very witty.
Yeah,
we're starting to get
traction, Mike.
Yeah, so we're starting to get invited to stuff. But not in
the launch of Daihatsus and things like
Daihatsu
that.
No, Daihatsu aren't in the country anymore.
Aren't they?
It's a shame.
No one even noticed.
I did.
Of course you did.
From like in terms of spare parts.
You're the only customer.
I
noticed.
Well, I am abusing my journalistic privileges. So there's a pretty girl who works at Kia who I met at the local coffee shop, and I've asked her if she could lend me a stinger for a day.
No one wants.
And what about a car, Mike?
A stinger, is that like a fluffer?
You know what a stinger is. What's a fluffer?
In fact, you were supposed to get a stinger on loan, but never have.
I'm getting one on loan.
Okay, Mike, well, we'll do stuff for you.
Kaya actually messaged me earlier saying that she has it for the week, and I'm going to get
it. Kaya, is it what you call Kia?
Kaya. When we're not making content, we obviously all enjoy consuming content about
Absolutely.
Cars. Not too long ago, we would normally get our fix by going onto DSTV and watching things like Top Gear.
Praying for a car show.
Yeah.
Because there were so few.
Yeah. And I remember like Tuesday nights were a highlight of the week because Top Gear would be on at like 8 o'clock and everybody would tune in.
Yeah.
And you would watch it. But nowadays, the internet,
smartphones. Especially things like YouTube.
YouTube especially. I mean, it's kind of made TV shows about cars kind of redundant.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, just in the way that you consume them in your own time. But I mean, I think the TV shows are still good.
There's still good content out there on TV.
They
arrive pretty late to the show. I mean, if a new car is launched, you're going to see it on YouTube long before you're going to see it on Top Gear.
Because
they've got to put together a whole episode or season. Whereas you get your YouTube access, your YouTube fix.
Yeah.
Straight away.
I mean, I remember back in the day, you used to have to rely on a very dodgy porn-esque quality video copy of the Fascination of der Nürburgring, which was the roof yellow board.
Oh, I remember
yellow
that.
Bird going sideways. And
Fascination, it was called.
Yeah.
This is it.
This is it.
Yes, this is it.
Fascinating.
But it's hell of interesting to say that because, I mean, car shows, how massive they were, Top Gear and all of that, is that actually I think someone mentioned now in the break, Chris Harris, Munke. And I think what's amazing about that is obviously there's a whole democratization of the tools to create car shows, and the YouTubers wash with, you know, car thousands and millions of car reviews with like less than 100 views. But so it's not that difficult to do technically to do this stuff. Mm. But I think that even for him, I'm not sure that his Top Gear experiment has worked. But like when you go back to him doing a 15-minute review with him and his mate, who does all the camera work, it's like world-class stuff.
Those are very good.
They're very, very, very good. And I still think that, you know, despite all the influx of content, that that stuff is still pretty good.
Absolutely.
Because it seems a whole American discovery thing where there were some amazing shows. I mean, remember Orange County Choppers was, what, 15 years ago?
Yeah, 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 yeah.
And what was the other guy? Boyd Coddington.
Yeah.
Bless him. No one posted pictures of him on Instagram when he died. but
they've been, a lot
is
of
is he dead?
He is, yeah.
Chip Foose? What was it? Overhauling?
But now that those shows are like catering to the audience with a mental age of like an 11-year-old. I mean,
not really.
Really.
No,
it's like you've got to have a bandana and a beard.
So there's
and
two.
Yes, agreed.
Have you forgotten what we discussed 2 minutes ago? Well, here's a recap.
That's a car. That's a very American
flames.
So it's preview review.
It's ridiculous compared to. I mean, it's pretty like dumb. I mean. Some interesting projects and amazing work, but they're pretty dumb.
So Wheeler Dealers is one of my favorites.
Yeah, it really is.
But they've changed the structure of it, where they've taken away a lot of the actual working on the car content, and they've moved it to the finding the buyer and finding the car.
He and Ed China don't speak anymore.
Yeah.
Really?
He's got that new guy.
He's
pretty good.
He's not bad.
But I think the major thing with the economics of it is that you can afford to reasonably make money with a fairly low cost in terms of, you know, cars and so on and so forth. Like Chris Harris, his input costs are not insignificant. But I mean, you think of that crew, that's three or four people, maybe some more in the back end for post. That thing is getting 1.5 million views. That's money versus a TV show in America. You have to have a minimum of, I don't know, couple of million.
Million. I mean, I don't like to brag, but this show is nearing on 1,000
listens.
Downloads.
Really?
Yeah.
Uniques, or
well, we don't know.
1,000.
We're just going to throw that number out there and hope it's
1,000.
1,000 something.
I don't want to show my mental age, but my favorite.
Well, we know what it is because you played that Hooter sound earlier. So that basically, you know, encapsulates.
You know. But I really love Fast and Loud.
That is cool.
Like, Richard Rawlings really makes me laugh.
But it's great. It's great entertainment, but I'm saying it's entertainment, but it's not a great car show. It's not a great car show.
Do you know who did a really good car show that was fun to watch, it was entertaining and it was factual? Don't know if you guys ever saw it was part of the Motor Trend channel, and it was a guy called Jason Camisa and Johnny Lieberman, and they paired up to do this.
Johnny Lieberman I follow on
Instagram.
Is that
Big Oak?
Yeah, with the beard.
Yeah, it was all right.
They were really good.
Yeah,
that was fantastic.
That really, really was good.
Apparently, he's a very, very difficult man. Wayne Carini.
Yeah.
You know who else is fantastic, talking about the internet, Italian.
David Cironi.
He is unbelievable.
He really is unbelievable because he gets so animated.
Yeah, but also his content. I mean, that Alpha video and then the one where he interviews Pagani.
The Alpha 155.
He manages to drive.
Touring car. Oh, my God.
He manages to drive the most insane stuff, like a Bugatti EB110. He did a great segment on the Diablo.
And on the Miura where he went to. Who was the dude who designed the Miura?
Marcello Gandini.
Went to go and interview
Marcello Gandini.
Marcello Gandini.
Yes,
he went to go, who worked for Bertoni.
Yeah.
And we had an argument about this the other day.
It
he designed better cars than Pininfarina.
No, he didn't. He designed four good cars. And I'm not saying they were unbelievable.
When your good cars are a Miura, a Countach, a first generation Countach,
Alpha Junior.
Exceptional. I'm not saying that.
That's a great catalogue.
My point,
what is your point, Mike?
Was that Bertoni had more bad cars.
Lancia Stratos.
Listen. No, and you've listed them all.
Pininfarina.
Anyway, so he went to interview the dude in a Miura. I mean, yeah, so he gets good content.
And he knows what he's talking about as well.
Absolutely. Yeah. And he's typical Italian and passionate and flamboyant. It's fantastic to watch.
Yeah.
But it's in Italian.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if you think about it, I mean, going back to, you asked the question earlier about welding or whatever it was, I think we underestimate the volume of contents out there, because if you're now, so I'm a complete snob when it comes to Porsches, uneducated and don't have an educated palate like you guys do into the different cars, but if I want to go and just watch a video about this, I can watch Harry Metcalf or... what's the other lovely chap? Looks like he should
Henry
be Harry
Catchpole.
Potter.
Harry Catchpole. He's very good as well.
Very
I like
him. There's so much content out there to David that it's amazing. Actually, I think we're spoiled for choice in terms of, I mean, even just Goodwood. Mm. Why would you even go and watch a car show now on traditional channel when you can go and watch all these amazing highlights in, you know, Goodwood multiple clips. Camera angles from Goodwood?
Yeah, onboard footage of racing at Goodwood is something to watch.
Maybe it's the GoPro that's actually doing that. Because, I mean, you think of almost any race in the world at the moment, any racetrack, and pretty much a selection of cars, you can go and experience a race, either live or via a driver's point of view.
Yeah, the GoPro is...
the event. It's quite extraordinary.
GoPro's done amazing things for bringing...
Camera tech.
Making everyone feel like they're in some kind of broadcasting.
Yeah. Like everyone's a hero.
Yeah. Oh, that's the whole thing, yeah.
Oh, see what you did there.
Like
are you sure you don't want to work in advertising?
No.
Okay.
But anyway, so there's a lot out there. And we also consume a lot on Instagram.
Yeah.
Instagram as well. And also podcasts. I mean, podcasts are something I've been getting into. Well, I got into about a year and a half ago.
What's a podcast?
Oh. That's what we're doing right now.
That's what we're doing.
It's like radio, but not
this
live.
Is what we're doing.
And those are also great because you can just put them on your phone, zone out, and you can find all kinds of channels. I mean, I've got a racing podcast that I subscribe to, and it's fascinating to hear about like driver psychology, all that kind of stuff that can improve your racing style and racing performance. And then you've got car reviews, you've got more lifestyle.
We must get Mike a car with a radio so he can listen to.
Look, what I find, like, sometimes you just want to have mind-numbing stuff, so I'll just download or listen to sounds of cars. So, like, I wanted to hear lots of sounds of a 917 doing flybys, which is just not a bad way to spend 10 minutes.
To go to bed.
Yep.
or to warm up before bed.
Yes.
Listen to
get you in the mood.
A cigarette.
BRM. It's a BRM.
A BRM 16 cylinder.
Oh, I think they only ever managed that Nick Mason thing like 1.5 laps because they kept breaking down.
I actually have that disc in the Aston.
Into the red.
Into the red, indeed.
But it's interesting audio, though, because there's obviously a massive growth in podcasts.
Yeah.
Because I think also the amazing thing about it, back to technology, is that essentially you've got, well, at least three idiots in this room, a reasonably intelligent person, you know, an adult outside, other side.
Behind the glass.
Behind the glass, because she's safe there.
Exactly.
So, Mom, if you're worried, she's safe. although there's apparently a smell in the house that's quite strange.
Yeah.
There's
a rooty.
But it's amazing how audio, this essentially, you can do this on your phone.
Yeah, you can. You can be anywhere. I mean, I can be on a car launch overseas. Yeah. I can get a driver or an engineer to come and have a quick chat with me. Stick it on my phone, splice it into the show, and you've got,
it's an amazing format.
Yeah.
And I think cars as well. The other interesting thing is that Mike saying, but is it amazing how audio, it's almost like TV broadcasts, generally speaking, even Formula One. I mean, the audio from it is pretty crap, like generally.
Yeah.
Mm. World Rally Championships used to do a decent job, but, I mean, that's kind of...
Well, listen, the problem with the modern Formula One cars is they all sound the same, and they're very very suppressed in terms of turbo muffling.
But if you can go to the extent of putting a Bose system in an in a, what's that thing called? That i8, to make it sound like a car.
Or an M5.
The Ferrari California, which has the most contrived sound in it, and then a couple of others, like this whole Vrupa AMG, Audi RS.
Jeez, you haven't driven the new Peugeot.
GTR worst.
You get the Peugeot 508.
You 508 for Formula
awful.
One.
Really?
What, make it just sound...
I mean, they give out Oscars for people who invent sound, what it sounds like to, like, I don't know, fire extinguisher in space, for God's sakes. You'd think that Formula One could actually invest some money in the sound of Formula One.
Yeah, you'd mean live at... I mean,
well, they augment it.
Yeah,
buy cars with fake sounds.
Yeah,
so
no. Well, I agree. I mean, listen, that's one of the reasons that I haven't had the desire to go to a Formula One race recently. I want to hear those things make my ears bleed.
Exactly.
Sure.
So they could stick speakers out the back of them instead of an exhaust, and at least entertain the masses.
Well, when they become
headphones, they have an app. If you want to listen to the full sound, then you must download the app. It'll €69. It's another money. And then you listen to augmented. You want it to sound like F1 from the 60s.
Oh, yeah.
From the 70s, 80s, 90s. I mean,
V8, V10,
you'll be touching yourself V12. In your costume area.
That's how I will.
When they become... when they're all powered by batteries, which is inevitable, then they will have augmented sound with big amps and speakers in the back.
Yeah. Anyway. It'll sound better than it does now.
It would. Guys, we're out of time, unfortunately.
No.
Yeah, we are.
Can't be.
Yeah.
Having too much fun.
I know, exactly. But... I'd like to thank you all for joining me again in studio.
Tom, it's always a pleasure.
It's always a pleasure having you here.
Enlightening.
And the fabulous Matthew Barnes.
Thank you. Matthew. Thank you very much for coming in.
Lord Sir.
Filling in for the doctor who's at the beach house.
On call.
Yeah.
Taxpayers' money.
Yeah.
thankfully, I changed, obviously, used a false name. Otherwise,
of course.
It would be embarrassing.
Yeah, it would be.
And Gavin, call me.
Let's talk. All right, guys. Thanks a lot.
Yeah.
And we'll be back next week for another episode of Cogumentative.